Hello, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 188 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, we're catching up with Tobin Ortenblad, Zach Schuster, and myself. Chat with Tobin about the 214-mile, 34,000-foot of ascent ride that he did with his friend Dylan, and he did it to support Black Lives Matter and raise money for that cause. And from doing that, it led to this other idea that he's come up with, this Big Rides, Big Cause website that they started, where everybody else who's raising money for Black Lives Matter, for other great causes, can add their ride to this site. It's a great move. It was good talking to Tobin and just seeing his evolution and his thinking evolve over the years, and what got him to this place where he wanted to do something and promote change. And it really is the kind of model that I think that Zach and I are looking for, and a lot of us are looking for from other professional athletes. We recorded this episode about a week ago, so some of the things we're talking about in here, like Lane Mara's enormous ride that he did, is now complete, and other things like that. But I wanted to hold on to it for a little while to give everybody the opportunity to listen to the conversation that we had with Adam Austin in the media pit. I really think that is a really good episode that complements this one really well. So if you came here for Tobin, awesome, thank you, but also go back and listen to that Adam Austin episode, which is the one right before that, because I think that's a good one that covers a lot of the issues that we feel are important for the cycling community. Cyclocross Radio and the Wide Angle Podium run the way they do because we are supported by Works, and we want you to take advantage of what they have to offer, including the Works Hydro Shot, which is a portable washer cleaner that uses the Works PowerShare batteries. Also, they got a ton of cool stuff that you can use at home while you're stuck there to get these DIY tasks and projects done, like the Sidekick portable work table, the Pegasus multifunction work table. Basically, go to Works website that they set up for us, which is yourcleanbike.com. Enter the promo code GEARUP. That's all one word, GEARUP, all caps. You're going to get 15% off of your entire order. Yourcleanbike.com. Enter the code GEARUP at checkout. And that is brought to you by everything that we do at the Wide Angle Podium Network. I'd love for you to go check out wideanglepodium.com. Go subscribe to all the shows there. Become a member. Help us support the best independent cycling content out there today. We continue to grow, and we want you to be a part of this family. All right, Zach Schuster and myself are talking with Tobin Ortenblad. It's episode 188 of Cyclocross Radio, and it's happening right now.
There's no other way to start.
We're here with Tobin Ortenblad. Tobin, 2 days after the huge ride that we're going to talk about here, but just starting right off it with it. How you feeling? How you recovering? How are the legs? It's a little more than an hour of cyclocross ride.
Yeah, it was beefy. It ended up being 16-hour ride time, 18-ish, a lap, a little over 18. We left at 5:40, got home at a little after midnight. That was not planned, but we lost a lot of time out there somewhere, I guess, snack stops. And to one of my friends, I said, you know, if we do it again, and I was like, oh, do it again, right? Like, that's probably not really going to happen soon, but for anyone probably doing it, like, would be good to set a 5-minute timer per stop, right? Because then you could stop 10 times and only lose, you know, theoretically 50 minutes, unlike we lost 2.5 somehow out there. But so I guess this is day 3 afterwards, and the first day, the morning I woke up after, was like, you know, you roll around in bed and you're like, oh man, like, everything hurt, arms, back, legs. And got out of bed, and yeah, just kind of all day felt like you're just staring into space, just kind of sitting there like, I've never been that fatigued before. And then yesterday was the second day. I went for a little ride, but was still pretty just zoned out. And today's day 3, and did some very kind of light, chill, 2-hour endurance-y workout, and it felt pretty good. And then I told Bill before you got on, Zach, just 3-4 hours later, right now I'm just zonked again. So yeah, I got to chill again before anything real, for sure. And then you look at the amount of work you did out there, and it was close to like 11,000, 12,000 kilojoules. So it's, I don't really, yeah, I have no idea what your body does afterwards with everything you're putting in. And I don't even know how you can process that much, how you can do that much work out there. You know, you're only putting in maybe 5,000 calories. You just can't put in much more than that without, you just can't do it. Yeah. So the deficit is huge. And yeah, it's been interesting for sure.
So let's actually rewind a week or so, and just the whole conception of what you were doing and why and what it all entailed, and sort of the thought process behind this ride.
Yeah. So I don't know what day, I don't actually know the day that George Floyd killing happened. If I'm being totally honest, it was almost 2 weeks ago now, maybe two and a half.
Maybe more than that.
I think it was 3 weeks.
Three.
Yeah.
Okay. So we had this idea. This idea originally came from Everesting. But you know, Everesting just sounded a little tedious going back and forth on the same climb. I mean, especially if you're, I don't know, a competitive athlete, you spend so much time repeating climbs anyways for your workout, right? So the last thing I do is go up for like this fun challenge and do more repeats to achieve this goal of 30,000 feet or whatever, whatever it is. So I was talking to my friend and messed around with a couple route ideas where the only rule that I had is you can't repeat a climb. And that's totally possible here, but I could not get the route under 200 miles. So we just went with it. And I knew that 200 miles would be, you know, doable, but the climbing just, it just kills you. But anyway, so yeah, I think I did have that idea before the George Floyd incident. And then, everything just snowballed after that. I was on the local trails. We have these water tanks at the trails, and that must have been about a week after the killing that someone painted them all Black Lives Matter, which was super cool. And then one morning I was out there early, and I was actually, well, rewind, I was out there at nighttime or evening and saw the paint, and then was back there super early next day. I could just smell like fresh paint when I rolled up, and someone had painted the All Lives Matter on it. I was like, oh my God, like, it is so easy to not take that. It takes 2 minutes to figure out why that's wrong. And I won't lie, like, when Black Lives Matter started, it, what, 8 years ago now or whatever, I totally said All Lives Matter. I was that guy. Like, I'm not going to pretend like that didn't happen. And then my mom or sister was like, no, this is no. And then, you know, you read for 2 minutes. It's just so easy to understand. Right. So that happened. And then, I posted something like, hey, community, like, let's get this taken care of. And then a couple people were like, you know, let's do it right now. And I was like, I have to train. And I was like, no, let's do it as quick as we can, so this doesn't stay up very long. So that happened on like a Thursday. And then the plan was on Friday to announce that we were doing the huge ride for a fundraiser. So just one thing led to the next. And then we started the big ride, big cause thing to try to engage a bigger audience, which has been going quite well also. And here we are. So there's a lot of,
did you end up repainting the water tanks, or how did that come about?
I did. Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
I originally said, like, I'll pay for the paint. And my friend's like, that's a cop out or something. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I had like an hour easy ride in the morning, and I had the real training later. So it was on the hour easy ride that I saw it pretty early, and then was like, I'll go train and then go get this taken care of. But was also like, I don't want that to be there all day. I don't want people to see it. I don't want to empower whoever did this. So yeah, then I was like, no, let's just, that was at 7 a.m. is when I saw it. So if I get up there at 10 o'clock, I told a bunch of people, I'm like, hey, I'm actually going to be there at 10. And I showed up at 10, and honestly, they were already halfway done by the time I got there. So I guess maybe I organized a little bit, but a bunch of people here saw it and did most of the work.
Nice.
I showed up with paint, and people were already there with paint, and it, yeah, covered it and had it already stenciled out. So they did it, but I did some touch up work.
Nice.
That was cool.
Oh, that's good. That's definitely nice to be part of that. And just in case people don't know, so where is it that you are riding? Where is it that you're living and doing all this?
So this is in Santa Cruz, California, and then we have a bunch of trails here, but this bit of trails is we call campus. So it's UCSC, or it's above UCSC here. And I don't know what these old water tanks are for, but it's kind of the central spot where all the fire roads converge and a bunch of single track starts, and everyone knows this spot, and there's always some sort of art on them. So that's where the painting was, and that's what we did. Yeah.
So what caught my attention about what you did is actually you had a pretty insightful Instagram post, you know, and you had just mentioned that you used to be an All Lives Matter person or whatever. And I don't know, I thought it was pretty reflective, and I was like, heck yeah, this is awesome, you know. And I was like, I donated money. I was like, this is really cool. You know, what about, you know, what happened this time and where you're at? Like, what changed for you?
That's a good question. I think just, with all of this, there's so much momentum this time, right? And it seemed like the complacency was the problem. Well, is the problem, right? And my sister's a lot more well-versed in all this than I am. So she's been here. She's home from school for the first time this year. We're all here. Everyone's working from home or retired or whatever it is. So, I saw that. And then I was like, she's always been the one who's like, you have such a big platform. I've had an ex-girlfriend say this too, actually, but didn't do anything. And then it was like, why have I not? There's nothing, you have nothing to lose here. It was just the right time to do something about it, I guess.
It's also, I mean, you are in a sport that is predominantly, we could even go like 99% white. So it's something that this is what I think Zach and I and other people sort of on the fringe of this sort of yearn for, is that people kind of stepping up when it's not necessarily something that may affect you personally in everyday life. And that's kind of,
and it doesn't, right? It doesn't affect, and well, I shouldn't say any of us, but it doesn't affect me here in coastal California. It's just, it's rich people, you know, to be honest. So yeah, we don't see it.
Oh, you did get some a little bit of backlash, right, on social or whatever. I thought that you handled that well in terms of people unfollowing you.
I mean, what are you going to do, right? Who cares? Like, it's just social media has always been like a love-hate thing for me. I hate that. It's so important to be good at. So it seems like you can, like, put all this effort into being a good cyclist and good racer, or you can put all this effort into your social media and get this almost the same amount of support, you know? So I've always been bitter about that. Because I don't want to like spend a bunch of time making content and putting the camera in selfie mode. It just feels narcissistic and wrong. It always has. And I've started to come around to like a bit of like, that is part of your job. But, so there's some backlash on there, but I'm like, I don't care how many followers I have. I don't care that people have unfollowed me. Like, this is a great game to like get rid of the BS, you know? So yeah, I posted that thing, and then I downloaded a follower at that point. I posted it because I knew it would be controversial. It'll show you who's unfollowed you just out of total curiosity. And it was like 13, 15 people right away, and whatever. But two of them had like, you know, the Punisher, like the skull with the teeth. I think that's like is it a Air Force thing, or maybe it's military? There's some, it goes back to something, it does come from somewhere, but generally people that try to hit you in their pickup trucks have that sticker on them too when they go by. So it's not they don't like cyclists, and they don't like liberal cyclists, I guess.
Yeah, when I was on Facebook like years and years and years ago, like even when it was just starting, and I was starting like in the crosshairs on there, it was kind of humorous because I had this these followers that come in and you look at like their profiles and they're all like militia members. And I think they just saw like in the crosshairs and they were like, that's my people. And then I'm sure they got very, very confused quickly after that.
Cyclocross.
Yeah. I was explaining to my mom actually what crosshairs is. I said CX hairs.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, crosshairs, like the scope of a gun. She knew the whole time.
Yeah, and it was
been mumbling when I was explaining it.
It's one of those things that it's something that if I could change the name now, I have just gone with CX Harris, which just is nonsense to anybody outside of our community, which is fine because I wanted to like distance myself from that. I changed the logo and I got rid of the public enemy looking logo, and even just recently, even 2 days ago, I was out on a ride. And I was out in like the ag center in Maryland, and this guy in this like work van pulls up, and he's like, "Gotta be careful with that kit on, or with that shirt on." Now, I was wearing my crosshairs kit, and I was like, "Yeah, you're right." I probably just
weird.
Yeah,
I had never even thought. I had never thought of it until I tried to explain what it was earlier. And I was like, oh, I wonder if Bill catches some flack for that.
Oh, well, I mean,
because it's a creative logo and it's really creative. I like it, you know?
Sure. But it was also, it truly just doesn't work anymore. And I changed the logo. It was actually after the Pittsburgh massacre in the synagogue that happened. And that hit really close home for me. And that's when I got rid of the crosshairs logo. Now it's just a silhouette of the cyclocross guy. And that's when I basically changed the name to just CX Hairs. But yeah, it's one of the, it's sort of like the same thing you went through. It's like more innocent times are just more naive times. And you sort of like go through this becoming hopefully a better person and figuring out that, you know, this isn't the right message, even though it might have been a catchy pun at one point. Maybe that's not the best message going forward.
Yeah, 100%. So, but yeah, funny. So I was wondering about that. Yeah.
So I got another question for you, kind of along those lines. We've seen, I think, from some corners, a recent episode of the Media Pit that we did with Adam Austin. You know, he brought this up in terms of a lot of cyclists not really saying anything or whatever, you know, and there's been some criticism in that realm. But you mentioned that, you know, you talked about having this platform and putting it to use. You know, has your perspective with this and kind of the reaction you've gotten changed on that from, you know, being just a cyclist to kind of like, hey, I mean, you raised how much money did you raise? You raised a lot of money.
We're at like 23 grand now, but I do think we can, I won't close the fundraiser for a week or so. And, Light in Motion did some, they're going to do a little write up, and I think Radivist is going to post that. So I hope that brings a lot of fresh eyeballs to it. And hopefully, I mean, it'd be cool if we get 30 grand. It would just be crazy. I mean, I put up the 6 grand thing and went out to get my bike ready to ride after I did all the posting. And then my sister was like, dude, you're at 1500 in 20 minutes. So I was like, wow. And then we got 6 immediately, 10 immediately, 15 within 3 days. I mean, yeah, it was super fast. And I think close to 400 individual people have donated. So, but back to the original question of like, do I think it's bad that people have been silent? I don't really know. I mean,
no, it was more, you know, has it changed your perspective on the power that you have? I'm just saying that I think more people wanted to see people like you. That's not what I'm asking.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, it 100% has, because the response was just profound. Like people were, I mean, it doesn't even matter if people are into it as long as you think it's right, but just making that statement and more just showing what you're about felt good. And then, hopefully younger racers see that and can do something about it. Like Lane, you guys probably saw Lane's thing. Lane's doing something, which I want to see what he does, because 30,000 feet was gnarly, and to do 330% more.
Yeah, 100,000 feet in 48 hours, I believe, is Lane's ride.
No, that's his goal, and he starts in 2 days.
Yeah.
But I also think with making a statement or just saying anything, like, we're also in a cycling, I'm assuming, at least from what I see, is a pretty liberal sport. Like, I don't see much like conservative or Trumpy supporters or racers, and they might be there, and that's, you know, they're that's there. Fine. I'm not out to I'm not out to tell them they're wrong. I'm not, or whatever, but I think for the most part, it's pretty liberal. So you kind of just assume most people are on board with what you're saying, but And for the most, nothing has surprised me yet. No one has been like taking a stance, but, I don't know. Just something I've thought about before. I catch myself at host houses every once in a while. Like, for the most part, we stay at the same houses now, but you know, if you're with a new host, you just assume they're liberal, you know, and like, 2016, we're out there traveling, and we're in like Ohio, and I Chris McGovern and I were like, Trump, you know, no way Donald Trump doesn't have a chance. And we're in like Cincinnati, and we see these posters and yards that are as big as the garage. They're just like, we're pro Trump, and we're like, oh wow, wow, oh boy. So yeah, it's interesting navigating the politics of your people you're around, I guess.
Yeah, it's. I mean, for better or for worse, I think that cycling does bring in the full spectrum. I feel like in the circles that you travel, it is probably more left leaning. But I think even, you know, you look at more just community and citizen based racing shit, like gravel, I think you just it just sort of runs the gamut of people that you're gonna have out there, and that's, I mean, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think we want
I don't think it's a bad thing either. It's a good thing.
Yeah,
it's actually what it is. I mean, you don't make any, if everyone's like-minded, what do you accomplish,
right?
You know, there's nothing gets done. And I guess what I said is overly simplified, because we're with the same 60 people every weekend, you know? And yeah, you do go to gravel race and there's new people. So
at the same time, I will say that in the marketplace of ideas, I am not scared of saying some ideas are bad and wrong. And that's, I think, why Zach and I sort of appreciate that you were one of these people stepping forward to say, hey, you know, just like the All Lives Matter thing, that you were like, this is wrong. And you're like, absolutely right. This is something that needs to be changed. And that's the, I think, the people that we want to sort of root for, that are willing to sort of step out of their comfort zone and do those types of, make those type of statements. You know, that's.
And out of your comfort zone is a good thing to say, because I don't feel well versed in any of this, really. But it doesn't take much to become a little more well, you know, a little better read on everything and whatnot. And just having an open mind to like listening to what others have to say and why they think that. And it's really simple. Like, when you break down to it, and if you let yourself just like listen and see what everyone has to say, and it's not hard to figure out why there's all these systematic problems in this country, when you just get down to it. I mean, it's really easy to say like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, but it's really not that, it's not quite that simple. Yeah. Unfortunately. I don't know.
One thing that I guess I really like, about what you've done is, I think, you know, I think there were a lot of people of, you know, kind of like the white liberals or whatever, who were like, well, what do I do? What can I do? And especially in biking. I mean, I know I was in Minneapolis and out riding, you know, the last couple of weeks. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, you know, like there's more important stuff going on. But it seems like this idea, I loved the concept of the dumb ride for a good cause. You know, you've kind of like, I'm thinking about what I can do now, you know. I don't know, like, how did that idea come up? And it seems like it's resonating. It seems like it's a thing that cyclists, it's like, hey, this is a thing I can do. I can raise money.
And even
it's what
add,
we do.
Even to add what Zach's saying, what I love about it is that you made it then. You said, okay, this isn't just about Tobin and Dylan. This is more community-based and just starting, you know, actually going out, creating a website and saying, hey, if you have rides that you're doing that are supporting a good cause, throw them up here. So, you know, the big rides for a big cause. I think that's awesome that you've gone like, this isn't, as you said, you don't want to sit there and pimp yourself out on social media and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That you're basically bringing in the rest of the community with Lane's ride and everybody else's ride that I see that are already up here and just allowing for others to sort of share in that platform.
Yeah, exactly. So that, we did our thing and there was a lot of people were really stoked on it. And then I was talking with, one of my friends, Brian Bernard, who used to work at Santa Cruz, and then my friend Jen from LA, and she was also doing a big ride. She's like, I want to do mine the same day as yours. And like, we can try to make this thing happen. And then Brian was like, how, you know, like you could do something bigger and this and that. So like the two of those together was like, why don't we make a, some sort of, I don't know, like community. I don't really know what the word you'd say is, but be like, hey, look at what this person's doing. Look what that person's doing. Look what you can do. You know, you don't have to go ride 100 miles or 200 miles. You could do, all I care about is that you do something that's hard, is challenging for yourself. And you, I don't have the reach that, you know, Joe Blow has in Florida or whatever. But if Joe talks to his Floridian folk and they get excited about it, then there's a little group, a little cluster there, and there's a little cluster here. And, you know, it'd be cool if it just caused this ripple effect. And it looks like it might be. But there's, I don't know if there's a shelf life to this stuff, but it seems like there might be, but it'd be cool to just, it'd be cool if there wasn't. And this was the one that actually, you know, enacted some change. So, yeah. Time will tell on that front. But every day in the morning I wake up, I check the Google form from the website and see, is anyone put anything up? And every day there's a new one or two in there. And yeah, it's just kind of staying on top of it and keeping people excited about it for now, which is the most social media work I've ever done.
Yeah, so just to list them off. So we got Lane Mayer, who we talked about, is 100,000 feet of climbing in 48 hours. Corey Williams added his challenge up there with Eversting for Equity. What else is up here? We got Winston.
Yeah, scroll a bit.
Yeah, Winston Lazar's ride for Blackstone Bicycle Works, 200 miles, 14,400 of climbing. You know, it's community bike shop, youth and education program, another great, you know, cause there. Jen Whalen and Aaron Lamb, Moving Mountains for Social Change.
Jen's my friend in LA who helped inspire this whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So her ride's up there, which is awesome. It's just really cool just sort of scrolling through this. Mackenzie Melker's Gravel Camp Out for a Cause, you know, 103 miles, 16,000 feet of ascending. Joel Wien's Ride Across Minnesota. There's a cool one. 250 miles, 4,800 of climbing.
Yeah.
And actually, a kid I know who goes to school up in Washington, and him and his buddy just posted it, and they raised a couple grand.
What was his name again?
Payson and Harrison. Payson. And I was Parker. Just like, it was really cool for me because Harrison was a junior when I started. And you know, like you see juniors come up and you want to see them do good and like turn into like good human beings. And it was just like, I was really proud. Like I've seen him grow as a kid and I got to see him at nationals, you know, this year. And it's like our cycling scene did something right, you know, raising kids like that. So that was a really cool moment, I think, for me.
Yeah, no doubt. He and his buddy there. So they're still on there. And then they did their ride last week, I think. So theirs is under like the completed tab.
Yeah. But I think like what you started when I gave a little bit of money and it was at like $200 or $300 and they ended up like upping their goal to like over 2,000. So I think, you know, you started something. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. And I think everyone's going to, meet or surpass their goals. I don't know. I mean, as long as they're not insane, but like,
yeah,
it's totally happening.
Yeah. So Payson, definitely, they met their goal. So they did it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah.
So right now it's staying on top of, I'm trying to stay on top of when people's fundraisers are closing, because there's a bar chart in there, which will show whose money went where. And it'll be cool to see, I mean, in a month or two, if this really gets big, to see just how much volume is going where. And like, that's what this community just did, was that. So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this now and want to follow along to see exactly the rides and what we're talking about, it's bigridesbigcause.com. Has all the info.
I will admit, I did like Dumb Ride for a good cause. I was kind of hoping that
Dumb Rides for a good cause.
I mean, I know you're going bigger or whatever, but I just thought that was perfect, because it was a dumb ride. I don't know. I thought it was a really cool idea. And I think, you know, again, at a time when, I mean, we've had these conversations, Bill and I and other people, it's like, well, what can we do? And, you know, for cyclists, it's like this empowering thing. It's like, I can take this dumb ride that I was going to do anyway, and I can make it for something. So,
but yeah, exactly. Like, we were going to do it no matter what.
Yeah. Kinda. Yeah. See, like,
and it's also, it's kind of goes back to the conversation that we had with Adam the other day, which, if you all are listening to this and haven't checked that out, I, you know, ask you to go listen to that, the episode before this one with Adam Austin, which I think is a really great conversation on what it's like to be Black and racing bikes and living in this environment. And it just, it was a really compelling conversation. But one of the things that he kind of emphasizes, like, this, it was sort of this convergence of COVID happening and then the Black Lives Matter movement sort of put on top of that, in a situation where it had everybody's attention. Because everybody's at home. Everybody's not out living the life that they would have been living, you know, go back a year. It's completely different. So,
yeah,
it sort of came at a time where people have the opportunity to focus on this and then to do something. So, I guess for you, it gives you an opportunity to do something. But even moving from that, what's it like now? Just sort of, what's your mindset? What are you preparing for? You know, as you're a professional bike racer, and you're kind of been put on hold now for months. I mean, obviously it's like, you know, cyclocross is your main thing, but you've also shown in the past that you spent seasons riding road. I mean, you're wearing a Breck Epic shirt right now. You've shown that, you know, like, mountain biking was something that it was cool seeing you out there and competing in those races last season. So it was definitely something that you were kind of dipping your toe into. And then it's like, where's the motivation? What's the plan? What's happening now with you?
Yeah. Well, I guess to backtrack a bit on the COVID and everything, it's a good and a bad time that everything happened. 'Cause, like, 100%, like, I have more time to do the big dumb ride, right? Like, normally I wouldn't even be home right now, but like, I have nothing but time to try to put a lot of effort into something else that's not on the bike. So that was good. But yeah, so then, yeah, to fast forward back to the question, I'm not entirely hopeful for cyclocross at this point. I mean, just to be honest, I think everyone needs to really be honest with themselves, but don't get lazy with your training, which I have no idea what to do, right? Like, we're fully training and preparing for cyclocross season, but I'm not holding out hope that it's going to happen, because just as a nation, we haven't made any progress to, like, I don't know what progress looks like, right? This is completely unprecedented. Like, is it a vaccine? Is it this? Is it that? Like, it's such a dynamic situation, and people think we're making progress, and people are getting sick of quarantine and traveling a bit and going out, and we're not hearing about the crazy like New York death rates anymore, but it's not gone. I mean, it's 20,000. I think I heard something like 20,000 new cases every day. Still, the death rate may have dropped, but it's far from gone. So yeah, as far as racing goes, like it's the thing. It's hardest. It's good and bad. Is normally when you're racing every weekend, you can't dig insanely deep all week because you have to be somewhat fresh for your weekend event. But now that there's no racing, I mean, you can hit 3 week training blocks and just be a mess at the end, right? Like you can go so deep, and on the weekends you train, you know, 8 to 10 hours, 8 to 12 hours just on the weekend because you can do it all day. You just, there's nothing to do, and you can really make some really big gains right now. And I think if you have the motivation to do that, it's going to be, when cross does happen or whatever racing comes back first, it's going to be very evident as to who stayed motivated and who did the hard work, because it's going to be, it's just going to be a split. So that's definitely keeping me going right now, is just doing the process, doing the work. I have a new coach, Chris, and I, a couple months ago split, and it was totally amicable. We've been together for 7 or 8 years. So I'm working with a new coach, and there's a ton of just new workouts and stuff. It's a little fresh right now, but it's really hard work, and we'll see. The work's 100% paying off. It's just, will I get to use it, you know?
Yeah.
And there's not even group rides, right? Like,
right.
You can't even go beat up on the old guys. Like, it sucks.
I think that the first, assuming we get back to racing this year, and that's a huge assumption, which I'm not sure is going to happen. So even down the road to next season, that first race, I just am so looking forward to, because for you guys at the elite level, it's going to look like a Cat 3 Masters disaster for that first lap, where everybody is so like pent up and charged to go that it's just going to be
aggro.
Like, yeah, like super aggro.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Man, I can't wait to crit racing season next year.
Oh, crit? Just everything. Yeah, crit, cross, whatever it is, yeah. I don't think you realize how much you love racing until you don't have it. You know, we're all so competitive, or we wouldn't be doing this. And yeah, I don't know. I'm not someone who goes out and chases Strava KOMs, because that's not bike racing. Like, I don't care about it, to be honest. So that's getting some people through, and if that's what it takes, good for you. But it's not, yeah, I don't know, it's not for me. I'd rather go do like some huge ride or something different. Yeah.
You know, looking at it just sort of half, you know, glass half full instead of half empty, you know, physically, some of this has to like benefit you, just being healthy, being like a full sort of training and not being like overtrained or exhausted and all that kind of stuff. I mean, from there, it's almost, I mean, I know it's hard not having the racing, but that's got to be like, there's got to be some positive impact of that as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, you're home. You're not running around, jumping on planes, driving, whatever it is. Yeah. I mean, you definitely have a lot of time to just get everything dialed and try to maybe focus on some new routines, some new habits, whatever it is that you don't necessarily have the time at home to really commit to. So that's a definite plus right now. And, yeah, so that's good for sure.
And for you personally, I mean, if we look back at kind of your history racing a couple of years ago, you sort of seemed to have it all dialed, where, you know, racing it out for wins every weekend. Last season seemed like it was more of a struggle to sort of find that form and find that the front of the race again. So do you feel like this sort of reset has put you back in a place where, at least in the American cyclocross scene, that you're somebody that's going to be up there looking at the front of the race again?
Yeah, for sure. So the last 2 years, I mean, it was, I guess 2017-18 was the, like, my breakthrough year, and then the last 2 years have been, you know, broken bones and then just kind of struggling. And so yeah, I mean, working, just hitting a reset and trying new things instead of like doing the same process and hoping for a different result. I was excited that I made the hard decision to like try some new things, and it seems like they're going well. And now I'm like, well, let's see if they're going well, but you don't get to do that. So yeah, I'm fully, if cross happens, I feel like really strong. You just, how do you know? You know, you don't really know until it's, you know, the gun goes off.
Yeah. And a further commitment to keep those collarbones unbroken.
Oh, what? Wait, what about collarbones?
Don't break them.
Oh yeah, they're good. We're crushing it. Totally solid.
No, Bill, he led onto something, Tobin. I feel like when I was at Cyclocross Magazine, the last couple of years, you've been great, and I really appreciate your professionalism, but like, not the happiest of times for our interviews, you know?
No.
So it's awesome to be chatting with you now, but you know, how are you keeping that positive, PMA or whatever? Cause you've always been really positive and forward thinking. And especially as Bill mentioned, now you're dealing with, because I imagine you were looking forward to this even this summer to get out and rip and show what you can do. You know, how are you staying positive and focused?
I guess I've always tried to be fairly positive. I can definitely get down and negative and, you know, have a cry after a race or whatever you got to do. But trying new things and seeing results is kind of what gives you like that little fire every single time, like this worked, that worked. Just seeing change in the changes, they're going in the right direction, kind of what's keeping me happy. And with cross season last year, it's just weird. It's weird going from at the front of the race where you do know you can win and people expect you up there to not doing well, and then literally like not even being a front row starter, right? Like you're just like, what am I doing? You have so many, I questioned a lot last year where I'm like, if I don't re-sign a contract, I'm done. Like I can't do this. And I'm like, well, that is a call I will have to make one day, but it's not a call I want to make right now. And that was really bummed me out. Like I'd get really sad about that because I think we have to be realistic with this sport we love as a professional. Like if you're a professional, hopefully you can do it you can do it at a professional level and be supported in, you know, an equal manner. But I don't think it's totally realistic to like not be making like moves to become an adult as a 23, 24, 25 year old, right? Like, you have to be realistic, like, oh, what if I'm out here getting 8th, 9th, 10th place? Like people they don't care about those results, even if you're a cool person, right? Like, so if you don't get a contract re-signed and you're not doing this as a job and you didn't finish your college, you don't have a normal job. It's just like, for me, it feels like a glorified hobby. And I don't feel like that's a sustainable model to like chase around the country and, you know, just chase around the country and race my bike and just do mediocre and not feel good. So that was like a super low point, thinking about like, okay, well, how many more years are you going to do this at mediocre? Because it's not, I don't want to put off effort and not be a contender. So those are the low points. And, you know, you talk about that in your head, you try to reshuffle and find victories in the little things. But then, yeah, like making some changes and whatnot and feeling that difference, I'm like so ready to go, but there's nothing to go to right now. So yeah, being realistic with what we have on the horizon is definitely something I think we should all be doing, but also, yeah, I don't know. Right. I just have no idea, but for now I'm stoked. So that's good.
Yeah. But it's also, you're what, 25 now?
25. Yeah.
So I think you're one of these people that we sort of fall into this mindset that I think that at least I'm guilty of it. I was like, oh, you seem older than you are, because I think we've seen Tobin Ortonblad for so many years now, you know, coming up from a junior and on. But at the same time, you know, you're just a couple years out of U23. So it's not like anybody should be writing you off. And I think what, and everybody's going to have sort of those kind of dips and rises in their cycling career. And yeah, when we have Tobin as like Peloton instigator, that's kind of my favorite time. And I talk about that a lot. Like that year, like three seasons ago, when you were the guy that everybody else was pissed off at and wanted to get rid of during the race, that was sort of the new golden era of US racing for me. And that's
I was just about to mention that. We talk about that like literally every Media Pit episode all season, at least in the green room, if not on the episodes, about how much we miss having Tobin mixing it up. So it was like cool to see the Tobin that we know. I mean, and it was awesome to see towards the end of the season you did have some success, and I think Taylor had talked to you or whatever, and it was cool to hear that perspective. But it was like, this is a good thing for US Cross, as Bill said. I think everyone kind of sees that.
Yeah, I guess I should have mentioned that last year. There was a good little East Coast trip in there with some podiums and two wins and whatnot. But the same thing, like I have no illusions that was a lighter field. I'm 100%. I'm not blind to that. But that is why I went to those races, because I knew if I went to Pan Ams that I didn't feel like I was going to be a contender. So to go back and just have some fun at the front of a race again is good for morale. It's good for sponsors. It's just good for everything. Yeah, I think that the years when it is good and you're out there as a privateer and you're working out of a minivan and Cannondale's there and in Rafa and Aspire and everything, and it was just like this little punk rock, like let's rent the minivan and just go race our bikes, and like if it's muddy, like let's try to clean the minivan, please, because it's on my credit card, and like, and if it's snowing, like don't crash the minivan. Because I think I have insurance through my credit card, but like, Chris, your name's on the car and it's on my credit card, and you know they're going to weasel their way out of the insurance on that one. And then just like things going south and just acting like it's all okay. I don't know. I guess you just have to be positive about everything, because like there's all these, I try to teach the kids at cross camps and other racers, like you have, especially with cross, so many variables. You have travel variables, weather variables, equipment variables. Like, people really get stressed out about these things. But there's, out of 30 variables, what you got? You got five of them you can control, maybe four. Like, if it's going to snow and you're just freaking out, why are you freaking out for? It's a waste of energy. You can go out there and, like, test your file treads for ice or your mud, or have a plan for like, if this happens, then we do this. So you're not running around like a chicken with its head caught up on race day. But I don't know. That's the stuff. And I think that was cool too, because a lot of people saw that like, we can do this with just a mechanic or my dad or my mom, and we can go to the race and we can be competitive. We don't need the huge team tent. It's nice though, don't get me wrong. Like, have you guys seen the inside of the tent? It's awesome. Yeah.
But that kind of brings up, you know, and I talked to Chris about a month or so ago and had a really good conversation with him. And I think that's something that we all saw with you and him at races. And it was a really potent combination that you guys had put together and achieved with that system, you know, moving away from Chris McGovern as your coach, and as I'm assuming as your mechanic as well. Have you thought about what that looks like for you going forward, how you're going to structure it if, you know, when we do get back to racing?
I haven't much. Chris and I, we haven't talked about mechanic stuff much. I know that the rough thing with Chris is Chris builds bikes, and Chris doesn't have a normal job. You know, he's building bikes, he's making stuff, he loves his life, and I love that. I've learned a lot from him. But like, if he has I go to like a weird schedule of races, and if like a bigger team offers him a full-time job, it's hard for me to like compete with that. And I know 100% his allegiance is to me, and I love that. Dad's his mind to him, but like if some team gives him a real salary to come to all these races, and I'm like, oh, I don't know, we might do this or we might do that, and if this is good, then I'll go to this. Like, that's not fair for me to, like, you know, string him on like that. So, yeah, you know, I'll have to actually figure that out, because our partnership, even just mechanic racers, totally good too, and just hanging out and, you know, talking crap and whatnot, like that's awesome. So I haven't put a ton of thought into like what or if there's a new setup, but as far as like all the bikes and equipment goes, that's all the same. Nothing new on that front, but yeah, I'm not sure what the schedule, exactly what the schedule looks like. I mean, before this all hit 100%, I would have had the schedule already done and something to look forward to, but yeah, I don't, same thing, right? Is there a schedule? Is that real anymore? Is nationals happening? Who knows? And maybe cross can happen, but like, is it healthy to happen if there's like not a lot of spectators? I don't know. There's so many variables. Like, even if Bill or you're there and you're doing great coverage, is that good enough? Is that what we want? Or
I'm not confident that anything's really going to happen. And just listening to the, even on the local scene, just in the Mid-Atlantic, there's a lot of sort of behind the scenes debates going on, and it doesn't seem, even on just the grassroots local level, it just doesn't seem promising that much is going to come out of this season. And I honestly think it's okay. I mean, I think the sport will be there, and we'll be fine, you know, even if we take this year off.
Totally. I agree. Like, the sport's, it's not going to die, because when everything died this year, right? Like, whatever, we'll do it next year.
Yeah.
But I don't want that to happen.
I mean, it could be bigger. I mean, we'll see, you know, next year, not having it for a year. I mean, maybe, who knows, you know, what's going to happen. But yeah, I'm kind of with Bill. I think a few people have reached out and been like, hey guys, can you guys do something on next cyclocross season? And we're like, no,
we want to do.
It's going
to
be, well, I mean, I don't think either of us are very optimistic. I just don't think people are going to show up, even if there is a race. Like, who's going to go race their bike?
Yeah.
I've thought about that too. I'm like, well, if there is a season and, you know, we're racing and traveling, that's fine. I don't mind like putting myself at risk to get sick. That's whatever, you know, it would suck, but I don't want to get sick. But if it happens, whatever. But what if I bring it home with me and then give it to my family? Or even if, you know, by next year, I'll probably have my own little studio, but like my dad still picks me up at the airport and there's still contact. And, that's the problematic bit, is even if you're okay with it, like, what does your family think? What are the people around you think with you jumping on a plane and traveling to New York as the first race of the year, right? Like, granted, it's not, you know, New York City, but you're like, the optics are not good here, people.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people, you know, are going to be making those decisions locally, and, you know, and so many of the races you race at depend on people showing up, you know, and bringing their families out and stuff like that.
And it will be local first, like you said. Like, things will open locally, and we'll just have to see how that goes. And that's probably a good first step. But also with cross, maybe not happening this year. I don't know how deep you guys are in like industry stuff, but the bike industry is killing it right now,
right?
Everyone is sold out of stuff. All the cheap bikes they had and they can't sell are gone. I know my local shop is killing it. They're 5 weeks out on service. Santa Cruz Bikes is selling bikes like crazy. Like, initially the first week or two, it was like, this is terrible, it's gonna kill us. And then everyone that hasn't exercised since the 90s is like, I love riding a bike, and that's great. So go buy the $500, just buy all those $500 bikes that sit there and whatnot. And it's awesome. I mean, maybe cycling, maybe something good will come of this whole thing, and there'll be more people that are excited about bikes.
As not to get into Gallo's humor, but maybe, you know, Santa Cruz was better off sponsoring a pandemic than Tobin.
Exactly. exactly.
Wow.
Oh no.
It's always an hour in that the podcast just takes a turn for the bizarre, and that's what just happened.
Yeah. Like, oh.
But seriously, though,
we'll have to see.
I will. One thing I do want to ask you, though, just going back to last season, it was kind of cool. I think for both of us that we'd show up to these domestic mountain bike races where it wasn't something that in the past I've really covered that much. And I'd see you out there. I was like, cool. Here's somebody I know. Here's a friend out there racing. It seemed like it was kind of a whim and just sort of something fun for you to do. But now that you sort of have your foot in the water in the mountain biking world, is it something that you want to continue and kind of do more competitively?
Yeah. And it's funny you say that because, I mean, there's no secret about what Santa Cruz is doing. We fully had a plan. I mean, we had a little team of, like, privateers or others that Santa Cruz sponsored, and we were going to have legit support, all the Epic Rides races. Cross country was like the schedule for me this year coming into cross season.
Oh, so you were going to do the whole Epic Rides.
I was going to do the whole Epic Rides thing and the US Cups and Downeyville. All of those, right? So I think I was at the first US Cup when things really hit the fan, and I was driving down to, wherever that is in Southern California.
It was a Vail Lake?
Temecula.
Yeah.
And I was like, had on NPR and podcasts, and just, I'm driving down there. I'm just like, this is, what am I doing? And my mom and sister are like, don't stay down there in between races. I'm like, well, I'm not going to drive home like 8 hours, like, and just to do it again. So, but yeah, like this super, not negative energy, but concerning talk of what this is becoming, and what the whole way down I get there, and then like I'm there and it's just no one knows what to do, but we're racing. And
I think we even texted a little bit during that time.
Like, are you still coming down, or what do you think? Yeah. And I raced the short track on Friday and drove, I just got sketched out and drove home on Saturday. It felt irresponsible for me, even though no one probably had it there. So I left on Saturday and then got home Saturday night, and was, I don't know, I guess I was selfishly glad to see the races were canceled just so I didn't have like massive FOMO watching everyone race. But for sure, we were all, mountain biking was the schedule for the spring and summer. Sea Otter obviously in there too. And it was cool that Santa Cruz was like gonna support a handful of us as a little professional hit squad was what their goal was. So yeah, that obviously didn't happen, but maybe it probably still happen next year.
That'd be awesome. That'd be good. It'd be good to see.
But now it's not, you're not as much of a hit squad now that the word is out there. You've kind of like spilled the beans that it's happening, you know?
I was like under wraps, but I think it wasn't under wraps. So I don't know. I guess I'll let you guys know when this launches if I get an email from
Does this mean, are you going to do, so assuming like in a perfect world that we actually are back to racing, my plan right now is to cover the cross country race Thursday at Sea Otter and then fly to Wisconsin for the for those races.
God, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I totally forgot about Sea Otter.
Well, same thing, you know, Sea Otter just got transferred to October. Seattle was the first big event to pull the plug, which was probably good to kind of set the precedent for other promoters. It just got bumped to October, and you know, we're in the middle of June now, and July, August, September, it's only 3 months. Like, yeah, I didn't even think about that. Like, maybe do the race and then go.
Yeah. I think it's easier for me covering it than it is for somebody actually racing it, especially in two different disciplines.
It would be cool though, for sure.
It's kind of like what Catherine Pendrell did that at, she did Iceman on Saturday and then she did Pan Ams on Sunday 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That was pretty, that's not like an easy hike. I mean, I guess it's a little bit more flying across the country or whatever. So,
well, it's just still a lot, you know, and I think that's something going back to the privateer thing that the kind of turn and burn schedule is really difficult. Like, I try to stay positive and be like, oh, whatever, you know, we're just doing this, we're doing that. We got to finish the race, shower, bike, pack, get to the plane. There's no one to do the work for you. It's just Chris and I are doing the work. And to have, as a privateer, like, you have all your equipment. There's no one in the Sprinter driving your stuff there or set up to pick you up at the airport. So that's difficult to do that kind of stuff. And it takes a bit out of you, but I don't know. Maybe yeah. We could have someone out there with the bike set up or something. Just the logistics become a lot more complex all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and if we're, you know, I don't know if we're going to get like a good 30 for 30 out of it, like when Dion, with the Dion's double play. I don't know. You got to pick like a really, really baller double.
Good. Yeah.
You know, instead of in front of your like Learjet or whatever he, you know, was posing, you'd be in front of your.
Yeah, when we get Learjets in cyclocross, then we'll have it made.
We've made it. Yeah. Oh, man.
All right.
Yeah.
I think we're right at about an hour. We did it.
Did we miss anything?
I don't know. Anything else? Anything else you feel like we need to cover?
No, not really. I do have a Sprinter. I bought a Sprinter from Santa Cruz. It has a ton of miles on it. It seems like it does really well on all the trips I have taken it on. I don't know how I feel about driving across the country to bike races, though. Might be a big come up for the little privateer over here. Might be a broken down headache.
does it have the stereotypical, you know, the butt photo on the back?
I don't know if I'm ready for that. I mean, because like, it's great to be on the road with that, but then what happens when people see me driving around Santa Cruz with it?
No, I think you gotta do it. We gotta do it.
sounds
Tobin, it's called marketing, bud.
I know.
Talk to the Santa Cruz marketing folks. You gotta market yourself.
Or you could just
talk about that.
Or you could just go old school 70s and just put like the Led Zeppelin artwork that you had from a season or so ago just on the side.
Oh, yeah, that'd be pretty sweet too.
Yeah,
a lot of things to think about. Yeah,
you got time.
I have plenty of time.
Awesome. Well, dude, thank you so much for coming on and talking about it again. For people, you know, kind of what brought us here and what people should go check out is this Big Rides for Big Causes. Did I get that right? Website.
BigRidesBigCause.com.
BigRidesBigCause.com. Go check it out. Go open up your wallets and give to these. Everybody on here has some great causes that are worth your while, and it's kind of fun to follow along with these rides and donate to those individual causes.
Or do your own.
Yeah.
You might get a retweet from McTubbin.
Exactly. Yeah, that's 100%. Absolutely right. Yeah, throw your own ride up there. You know, it's got to be big and it's got to be dumb. Ride.
Yeah. And if Bill, it's not big and dumb as to, I guess, contemporary standards, just challenge yourself. That's all we need here.
I think right now, Tobin, we are putting Zach on the clock to have his own, because he's already done the groundwork. He's got to like put up another big, dumb ride. Zach, come on.
Yep.
I know what ride it is. So this will be that'll push me over the top. I got a buddy that I'm gonna talk to, so I know what it is.
Are you riding to Madison?
I thought about that. I did think about that. I just don't want to ride back. I don't know if anyone's gonna want to give me a ride back.
Perfect.
The plan or the big rides when I was organized, I'm like, well, you know, get your ride, get all your friends. I was like, I can't tell you to get all your friends right now, I guess. Like,
yeah, it's like get a friend.
A couple, maybe one or two friends that you trust and then go get it done. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? Like normally we'd be like, oh, get a big group and we'll raise all of the money. And it's like that would actually be socially irresponsible of you.
Yeah, exactly. And people ask, to like, hey, can we come on this part of the ride? Come here, come there, meet you there. And yeah, it was a little tricky to navigate. But the good thing is, right, if you like post a big enough ride, is like your flaky friends actually don't want to ride 200 miles. So they're not going to show up. So like you do have to post something big enough that your kook friends won't actually want to do it. They'll like talk about it, you know, but they won't be about it. That's important. Make it just hard enough that they'll scare some people off.
Awesome. Thank you, Tobin.
Yeah, thanks so much, dude.
And with that, we're out of here.
Hey, Wide Angle Podium friends. Join me, longtime cyclocross writer Molly Herford.
And me, endurance coach Peter Glassford, on the Consummate Athlete podcast.
You'll learn about how the pros like Katarina Nash, Ellen Noble, and Magalie Rochette train.
And hear the best advice from experts in exercise science, nutrition, and sports psych to crush your racing goals.
We discuss topics like how to run for cyclocross training,
if strength training will improve your cycling,
how NASCAR can teach you how to corner smoother,
and how to fuel for a long day at the races.
Come hang out and learn how to live a happy, adventurous life.
Subscribe to the Consummate Athlete podcast and visit us online at consummateathlete.com.